Welcome to the Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Christine DiMatte, filling in for Tom Hudson, who for the next 10 weeks will be hosting Decision Florida. And the launch of that hour-long show begins in less than an hour. Meanwhile, please keep our call-in number handy to join today's conversation on the Florida Roundup. You can call us at 800-743-WLRN. In numbers, that's 800-743-9576. And you can always tweet us at WLRN. First, I'm going to give you a little glimpse into the inner workings of the WLRN newsroom. In recent months, we've done so many newscasts that lead with a Zika story or revolve around a Zika story that we're calling such newscasts by a new name. We've taken to calling them Zcasts. Just a bit of gallows humor among reporters and editors that really we need to fall back on occasionally for these sorts of very serious stories, and I'm sure you will forgive us for that. We all know that there is nothing amusing about this very insidious disease, infections of which in pregnant women have been linked to birth defects in their infants. And certainly this week there were many people in Miami Beach not laughing. This week there was confusion, fear, anger in Miami Beach. One of two Miami-Dade County Zika transmission hotspots. Now, the cause of the public outcry, the pre-dawn aerial spraying for Zika-carrying mosquitoes that actually began this morning. Round two of that spraying is set for Sunday. With us in the studio is WLRN reporter Kate Stein.
Hi, Kate.
And joining us from the Miami Herald newsroom in Doral is reporter Joey Fletches, who covers Miami Beach for the Herald. Joey, you with us?
Yes. Hi, Chris. How you doing?
Also joining us over the phone, Dr. Anthony Fauci. He's director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases at the National Institutes of Health. Dr. Fauci, are you with us?
I'm with you. Good to be
Great.
With you.
Great to have you on. Now, Joey Fletches, the reason for the furor is that the decision to aerial spray was pretty much a reversal of what was originally planned. What was originally planned? Tell us.
Well, it was originally decided that there wouldn't be aerial spraying. They were going to stick to ground efforts using a more organic compound from these special trucks that they've ordered. And the reason was because of the high rises that kind of rim the barrier island of Miami Beach and the dense urban environment. That was the original word from the CDC and from state and local officials. That changed after the Labor Day weekend. Mosquito counts went up, and apparently they went up enough to convince everybody from the CDC down, well, as far as government goes, that aerial spraying needed to happen. It was a last resort emergency effort to get those numbers down.
Okay. All right. So let me understand you. Why wasn't the ground spraying enough? And the larvicide?
That's a good question. I think they wanted it to be enough. They wanted it to be enough, and it might not have been enough, perhaps because of not enough people removing standing water, perhaps. I mean, the Aedes aegypti mosquito, the species of mosquito that carries Zika, is a tough one to knock out. That's everybody agrees on that. And so maybe in the environment of South Beach, where you have a mixture of kind of dense residential and a lot of tourist businesses back of house behind restaurants, maybe perhaps no matter how much you push, elimination of standing water and ground spraying, it's still not knocking down these mosquitoes fast enough.
Okay. And Joey, Kate, you were both, this decision was made on Tuesday, right? To aerial spray, that reversal, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you were both at a public meeting on Wednesday where a lot of angry people showed up.
Yeah, there were a lot of angry people at this meeting. I was actually very surprised by the number of Miami Beach residents who turned out saying that they were really, really more concerned about the pesticide NALID than about the actual Zika virus. That was pretty interesting to see.
They were actually more concerned about NALID.
Yes.
Okay, that aerial spraying pesticide. Okay, what specifically were their concerns when you interviewed them?
Well, when I talked to them, there was a lot of concern about NALID possibly creating some of the effects that we see with Zika. So like birth defects, for example, or, you know, they're worried about the chemical being in the water and their children being exposed to it or their pets being exposed. And I think there's a lack of understanding about what sorts of concentrations of NALID will be in the environment as a result of this spraying. And that's something that local and state officials have really struggled to address, I think.
Okay. Dr. Fauci, you've been listening to this. People in Miami Beach, very, very much afraid of NALID. Can you address that?
Well, it's understandable when the general public feels that there's a chemical that they feel would be potentially toxic, and they don't have all the information that they need to make a judgment on it, and their concern is understandable. However, I think what they fail to appreciate is that the concentrations, as was just mentioned, of this particular compound is extraordinarily low and able to do the job at concentrations that have been deemed to be safe by the Environmental Protection Agency. So there would not have been any decision to do this unless it had gotten through EPA approval. So when people get concerned, you have to take it seriously and try and explain to them that although their concern is understandable, that scientifically the basis of it really isn't there, because it is really not a toxic compound in the concentrations that are used in aerial spraying.
Okay, so in other words, the droplets are so minute that you would have to have a prolonged exposure for it to be damaging to you or your children?
At a much higher concentration, that's the point. And the concentrations that are used are highly, highly diluted. I mean, to the point there is minuscule amounts of it, but it has the capability, as was just mentioned, when ground spraying, backpack spraying, and truck spraying don't work historically in other regions, when you get to the point where you're not entirely successful by one form of spraying, aerial spraying almost invariably does the trick when other attempts have failed. And I believe that's the reason why they made the decision to go ahead.
Okay. On the line with us, we have Valerie Vicente from Miami, and she had some concerns about this. Valerie, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Okay, Valerie, let me understand you. You have a 2-month-old daughter?
That is correct. And at the time, I live in Upper East Side, which was previously sprayed in early August.
Okay, we're talking about the Wynwood area, right?
It's actually north of Wynwood. They sprayed a 10-square-mile radius, and I lived in that larger area. That was outside the active transmission zone.
Okay, and you say lived, past tense. You have moved away?
No, I'm sorry. I currently live. I did, however, used to live on Miami Beach. But during the time of the spring, I was living here in the Upper East Side.
Okay, so let me understand. Your baby was a few weeks old when the spraying was happening?
That's exactly right. She was at most 6 weeks old.
Okay, and as the mother of a newborn baby, you know, what were you feeling when you found out that they were going to be spraying in or around your neighborhood?
I felt absolute terror. I was afraid, and I felt powerless because obviously there is, you know, a concern as to her exposure to pesticides being so young, with her neurological system still developing, and I felt that she was particularly vulnerable to those sprays.
Okay, Dr. Fauci, can you address Valerie's concern? She said she was out to sea and terrified.
Yeah. Well, as I said just a moment ago, those kinds of concerns are really quite understandable, and they shouldn't be taken lightly. But what the decisions that were made by the CDC and the Florida Health Authority were based on safety profiles that have been approved by the EPA, that the concentrations that are used are not nearly even near close to any toxic level.
Okay, Valerie, does that, you know, assuage your concern somewhat? Does that comfort you at all?
Not at all.
You're still not buying it. Why not?
Mostly because, I mean, we have seen in the past with other issues that the EPA is very lax. I mean, if this stuff is banned in the EU, it's for a good reason. You know, oftentimes the testing that's done is performed on healthy adults. I mean, here I have a newborn child, you know, who takes more breaths per minute, whose neurological system is much more vulnerable, you know, who has kidneys who are underdeveloped and can't process the toxins the same way an adult does. And so I don't necessarily trust that the government, because in large part, they don't have the studies necessary to say what the effects are on infants and what if it's going to cause some type of cognitive or developmental delay in the long term.
Okay, Dr. Fauci, Valerie brings up a good point. It was banned in the EU, and there have been a number of deaths in India, okay?
Yeah.
Do we know why it was banned, exactly why it was banned in the EU?
No, I don't. I don't know that. I'm I'm not the aerial spray expert of the country.
So
you're putting me in a very unusual position. I'm just telling you that the reason the decision was made was based on both the Florida Health Authorities and the CDC putting forth the evidence from the EPA that the concentrations that we used were not even close to anything that could be toxic. And that's just the EPA's determination. Now, if an individual doesn't want to believe that, I don't think there's anything that I can say or anybody else can say that would change their mind.
Okay.
So to jump in here, this is Kate Stein again, the reporter from WLRN, to jump in here on the question of why NALED was banned in the EU. I've heard anecdotally and have not been able to find confirmation of this. The ban happened in 2005. We know that. And what I've heard is that the ban was actually implemented for the safety of people who handle NALED, not for the people who are being sprayed, or, you know, whose communities are being sprayed in an effort to control mosquitoes there. So really, as I understand it, the ban was put in place.
Okay, so the people who were coming into contact
because,
with
yeah,
it.
Yeah, the workers who, you know, the were workers. Loading the planes and putting out the chemical, there was concern about their safety because they were exposed to such large concentrations. Again, this is something I need to look into further, but I think it's a bit premature to just leave it at the EU banned NALED, period, because I think that there are some qualifications that went along with that ban that need to be addressed further.
Okay. And Valerie Vicente, before we leave you, you have any questions directly for Dr. Fauci or for us?
Oh, I just want to add that I understand that generally the aerial spraying has been used in the past, and they said that they've used NALED in Miami for mosquito control, but the issue is that this was done August 4th, August 7th, August 12th, August, I mean, it was four times in a very short amount of, you know, a very short period, which is, in my view, you know, excessive. And so, I mean, that's just something that continues to be concerning to me and the effects of which we may not see for years.
Okay. Joey Fletcher, is that true, or was that spraying interspersed with the ground spraying and the larvicide?
Well, they did do spraying on the Wynwood side using NALED, but also BTI, that compound I mentioned earlier that is far less, or not controversial at all. It's organic. It's a bacteria that they use to do it on the ground in Miami Beach. But in Wynwood, they were alternating. So they did do several flights, and I don't remember off the top of my head how many, but they were going back and forth between doing a NALED spraying and then a BTI spraying. The only spraying going on in the beach will be NALED. It started this morning. There will be three more instances, the next instance being Sunday morning at 6 o'clock.
Okay. And we're just going to jump ahead a little, or rather jump back to what happened on Tuesday. The battle to fund the fight against Zika is turning into a bit of a political chess game in Washington, D.C. The U.S. Senate came back on Tuesday from a seven-week summer recess, failed again to pass a Zika funding bill. And here's Florida U.S. Senator Bill Nelson delivering a heartfelt plea to his colleagues, actually more of a scolding.
Let's stop this monkey business. Let's do what the Senate did 3 months ago when it passed, bipartisan by 69 votes, $1.1 billion in emergency funding, and send it down to the House and tell the House to stop playing these games.
Dr. Fauci, monkey business is what Senator Nelson said. All right, when you, it's got to be frustrating as a researcher when you're invested in protecting the public health, when you hear that legislators are dragging their feet about funding. So let me first understand the difference between the National Institutes for Health and the CDC. They're both government agencies, correct?
Correct. The CDC is responsible for general public health issues, such as what we were talking about earlier, which is not under my domain, namely mosquito control, in collaborating with the state and local health authorities for general public health measures, including mosquito control, to address the Zika situation. The NIH is different. We're a research institution, and our primary responsibility is to understand the disease in the context of developing countermeasures, such as diagnostics, therapeutics, and vaccines. And right now, okay, our major effort is focused very, very heavily on developing a vaccine for Zika, and we've actually already started in the beginning of August the early phase one trials for safety in one of several vaccine candidates that we'll be testing. So that's the
okay
difference between the CDC and the NIH.
All right, that's significant. I'm going to ask you in a second about that vaccine because everybody wants to know about that. But first, I got to ask you, does the NIH have the money to continue?
The answer is no, we don't.
You don't have it.
And we don't. And what we've been doing over the last several months, the president in February of this year asked the Congress for $1.9 billion in an emergency supplemental fund so that the CDC and the NIH could do what we have to do. And we did not get it. So what we've been doing is we've been taking money from other accounts that were for other diseases, diseases such as cancer and heart disease and diabetes. And we've been using that money to pay for what we feel is an emergent situation, namely needing to develop a vaccine. But thus far, we have not gotten any special appropriations from the Congress. All we're doing is taking money from other accounts. So Senator Nelson, I was actually with him and briefed him at a lunch yesterday at the Capitol, and he was asking the same kinds of questions that we're talking about now, and he is very frustrated that we're not getting the resources that we need.
Okay, how confident are you that you're going to be able to move forward with this vaccine, with this very, very promising vaccine, if you don't have that money?
Well, I'm not very optimistic at all, because we're coming to the end of the fiscal year on September the 30th, and we go into the next fiscal year on October the 1st. And if we don't come through with funding specifically for Zika, I'm going to have to begin to slow down and ultimately stop the vaccine development efforts, which would really be, I would think, unconscionable to have to do that.
Okay, I'm going to say something, and perhaps I'm not permitted to, but I'm going to say it anyway. If you don't get the money to move forward with this vaccine, that is the fault of Congress. Yes or no?
Well, I'm not in the business of blaming people for things. I'm just telling you the fact.
Okay, that's fair enough. Let's talk for a second, Joey and Kate. Let's go back to that public hearing for a second, that public meeting. There were a number of people in Miami Beach who stepped up and said, you know, the fears over Zika are overblown. A number of people who said there really is no clear connection to the microcephaly in the infants that is the major fear here. Joey, am I right?
That is, yeah, you are right. And that was probably one of the more surprising revelations from that public hearing. I understood people were going to be upset about aerial spraying. I mean, people were a little upset when it happened in Wynwood. There were more people who were more upset in Miami Beach. But then it was to see that some of that was rooted in a very deep skepticism of Zika and its potential harm to humans was surprising. I've talked to mothers who said, I am more afraid for my children's to be exposed to this insecticide than for them to get Zika.
Okay, and I'm wondering a second about alternatives to all of this spraying. And so is Santa from Miami Beach. She joins us now. Santa, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. How are you?
Terrific. What's your question for the panel?
So I'm more concerned about the environmental pollution. I know you say it's a very low volume. I'm a gardener at Miami Beach Botanical Garden. We have immense biodiversity within this plot of the Zika zone. And just like me and the rest of the Miami Beach citizens, we're concerned with the water, with the air quality, with the fact that this pesticide is going to be raining down from the sky into our waterways. And, you know, the effects will not be tomorrow or the next day, but further down the line. Can you speak to the environmental implications?
Okay, and Sana, let me understand you. You are interested in, what, a more holistic approach to this?
Yes, a more holistic approach. I think trying to solve one public health crisis with another public health risk plus serious environmental pollution, it doesn't make sense to us, and this is where the skepticism builds from. I think our community is really coming together, and we're seeing the true faces of our leadership, and it doesn't seem with the quickness to use pesticides and spray them on top of us into our waterways. I mean, we're an island, for Pete's sake. It's just very concerning for most of us, actually.
Okay. Before we say goodbye to Dr. Fauci, and we're going to keep Kate and Joey on. Dr. Fauci, can you address Sana's concern, a more holistic approach to this? Is there such a thing for this?
No, I'm actually not quite sure what you mean by a holistic approach. When you're trying to control a mosquito-borne epidemic that unquestionably, without a doubt, although some people have concerns, unquestionably is related to congenital abnormalities in a baby if the mother is infected during pregnancy. There's no doubt about that. That's incontrovertible. When you're dealing with a mosquito-borne infection, the immediate approach to it is to get rid of the mosquitoes to the extent possible. The long-range approach is what we're working on. Right now is a vaccine. But the immediate approach is to get rid of the mosquitoes. That's really the only thing you can do.
Okay. And Dr. Fauci, we are going to say goodbye to you now, but we are going to be coming back to you in a number of days about that vaccine. Thank you for joining us.
Good to be with you. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Doctor. Kate, can you speak to
Sana's question? Taking up Sana's question here, I think the jury is still, or at least from what I've heard from public officials, for me, I don't feel that I completely grasp the effects of NALID. I think I have some questions about what concentrations are being used and, you know, how concerned I need to be about the environment, because it has been, it's been shown to kill not just mosquitoes, but a lot of other insects. It kills bees and butterflies. It can affect birds and fish. And we've been told that it dissolves pretty quickly in water, as in it'll, you know, break down relatively quickly. It doesn't linger too long in the environment. But I think what we're really getting at here is a trade-off. You know, the trade-off between getting rid of these mosquitoes and, you know, controlling a possible public health risk with the Zika virus, and especially the implication for pregnant women and their unborn children, that versus, you know, what are the implications of what we're doing to the environment as far as, you know, basically killing off, you know, bees and butterflies. They can be affected. What are we doing when we're putting this pesticide around, you know, not, and I think that there's legitimate concerns. I think the concerns are legitimate about, you know, having the pesticide in the environment, and questions still haven't been answered as far as the implications for humans. But I also think that there's a trade-off that's being made that's pretty...
Yeah, there's
it requires more consideration, yeah. I think that's what I'm getting at here.
There's, you know, one side is saying, look, we need to find out more about this. Then there's the other side that's saying we need an aggressive tamping down of this thing. Do whatever you need to do. Eradicate it. Just blast it. Get rid of it, you know. And that's causing a bit of political debate, too. Joey Fletcher's in Miami Beach. Do you get the sense that this is also infecting, for lack of a better word, local politics, too?
Absolutely. I mean, it's affected politics already at the congressional level, and it's definitely trickling down here to City Hall. I mean, on the dais, there was one commissioner, Michael Grieco, who was sort of the champion of the crowd that did not want NALID. I mean, he himself said he doesn't want NALID sprayed in his community. One of his colleagues, Ricky Ariola, was also actually quite openly skeptical at first about Zika and its effects on on the humans and on pregnant women. Then he qualified that by saying he did a lot of research, talked to a lot of doctors, and said, you know, he think that the trade-off that Kate was referring to is worth it, that they have to spray in an effort to control this public health issue. But there is disagreement. There's disagreement among the politicians about how to deal with this. And even just yesterday, last night, in the county mayor's race, there was a note sent out by Raquel Regalado, Mayor Jimenez's opposition in this race.
Just last night.
Yeah, criticizing the local Zika response, and criticizing the decision to use aerial spraying. So it's getting out there. It's being used. It's definitely political ammo, and I think people need to be careful about that. They got to stick to a cooler approach, I think, a calmer and a more holistic, I guess, approach to assessing information here. I mean, when you talk about, the caller's question, I had to talk about holistic approach.
Right.
I think that they've done a lot of a lot of groundwork right now already. I mean, people that I talked to said they would be just fine if they continued this ramped up code enforcement, ramped up a cleaning of alleyways, finding people for standing water. There's been plenty of thousands of dollars of fines issued. And then this BTI spraying that is really only effective against larvicide. I think people need to know that too. It's mosquito larva, baby mosquitoes.
Right.
They are killed by the BTI, but this aerial spraying is, as it explained to us, is supposed to be targeting adult mosquitoes, so fully grown bugs flying in the air. And those are the mosquitoes that they've trapped and found in their daily counts that have gone up. So it's tough. And I think, as Kate said, I mean, I don't think anybody's dismissing this concern. It's a very legitimate concern. But the devil can be in the details here, the concentrations, the levels. Does it break down when it gets in the water? There's probably more study that needs to be done.
Right. I agree with that. Mm-hmm. I think that a lot of what people are looking for now is, you know, more numbers. Like, we need studies that show what concentrations of NALID are potentially dangerous to humans and what, you know, versus what's being sprayed. I've heard that it's as little as half an ounce to an ounce per acre of airspace. So, you know, you get like an ounce of NALID per an entire acre, you know, from the ground all the way up into the sky where the plane is spraying. And that's really, really not very much at all.
There have been a few studies, that a pesticide watchdog group told me about that suggests that there are neurological impairments that can come from long-term exposure that are similar to like Parkinson's disease and premature Alzheimer's. So of course there's going to be concern. On the line we've got Craig from Miami Beach joining us. Craig, you're on the air.
Hi there. I just wanted to, as a Miami Beach resident, indicate that I am for what the CDC, NIH, and government officials have backed. I'm a scientist myself, and when I hear people complain that the EU has banned this chemical, we have to remember that it's been approved here in the U.S. And the EU is...
Oh, yeah. They've been using it. They've been using it all over the United States for several decades now.
Correct. And the EU, you know, they don't have a great track record, a perfect one. They approve drugs that have been found to produce birth defects. So I think we need to trust the scientists we have here and the studies that we already have a long track record with of using. And so I just want to say, as a Miami Beach resident myself, I'm not opposed to the recommendations and the actions that our government officials have taken.
Okay, Craig, thank you very much for your call and your comment. All right, Kate Stein, Craig, obviously in the minority here based on what you saw and what Joey saw on Wednesday during that public meeting. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, he kind of reminds me, we heard at that public workshop from the director, the medical director, I think, for Florida's poison control centers. And he was saying, he's a Miami Beach resident, he's the father of a few children, and he was saying, you know, everything is a poison if you have a large enough concentration of
sure,
it. Like, water
right.
is a poison. If you drink enough water, you can die.
Yeah.
And
good
so
point. Very
he,
good point.
He was saying, you know, for me, the trade-off, I don't want my kids to be sprayed with NALID, but I don't want them to be exposed. But I also, you know, I don't want them to get Zika, and I'm really, really more concerned about Zika. So I think it comes down to a question of, you know, again, that trade-off that we keep going back to. What are we sacrificing if we decide to not get, you know, take every possible measure now to get rid of those mosquitoes? And for different people, you know, there's a different answer to that. If you're a pregnant woman, you're obviously going to be, well, you may be more concerned. I mean, based on the conversations with the women in Miami Beach, that may not be the case. But I would say many pregnant women are more concerned about the Zika threat than the NALID threat. You know, but if you're, you know, a man not interested in having kids, then maybe you are more concerned about NALID and exposure there.
Okay. And on the line, we've got Alan from Lauderhill. He has something that actually has veered away from our discussion about the use of the pesticide and into genetic modification of the mosquitoes that carry this thing. So Alan has a comment for us. Alan, you're on the air. Welcome.
Well, thank you. I live up in Lauderhill, so I realize I don't have a great deal of skin in this game.
Everybody does, Alan.
Everybody has
it's the public
skin,
health.
Right?
You do too.
But I would just like to comment on how the isotech technique of genetically modifying male mosquitoes to produce offspring that die young has not been mentioned at all. This is a technology that has been proven. It is ecologically benign. And I would just like comments as to why this has been so ignored, and also comments as to why this has been so buried in this obscure Florida Key that already has good mosquito abatement programs, and I would like to see it being more widely used.
Alan, thanks so much for your comment.
You're very
cut off, Alan. You're very welcome. Sorry about that, Alan. But to be fair, we have Nan Klingener in the Florida Keys, who has done a great deal of reporting about this push to get the genetically modified mosquitoes there. So, Kate, did you want to comment on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the genetically modified mosquitoes as a solution, a longer-term solution to mosquito-borne illnesses like Zika, is a really interesting and promising idea, because the way these mosquitoes work, they modify male mosquitoes so that they go out and they mate with female mosquitoes, which are the ones that bite and spread the diseases. And when they mate, the offspring of the female mosquitoes are, you know, they're rendered so that they don't survive past the larval stage. So they die off, essentially.
Breeding this particularly, this is Aedes aegypti now, breeding them out of existence, breeding the disease-carrying aspect out of existence.
Right.
Am I right?
Okay. Yes, yeah. You're basically breeding out the mosquitoes so that the mosquito population itself dies off. And, you know, it's interesting because they're, a lot of the same people who are skeptical of NALID are skeptical of using genetically modified mosquitoes as a solution to mosquito-borne illnesses. And I think it, again, goes back to a lack of understanding. People are afraid of, you know, and perhaps rightly so, afraid of introducing something into the environment that we haven't had before. It's a man-made, you know, creation that's going into the environment and clearly affecting a natural population, in this case, a natural population of mosquitoes. And so people are worried about, again, the long-run environmental implications of introducing something that's man-made as a way of controlling this these viruses, basically.
Right. If people are worried about unintended consequences of an insecticide, I think just as many people would probably, with good reason, be concerned about unintended consequences about genetically modified mosquitoes. It's a very interesting idea. It's something that some politicians have talked about a little bit down here that I've heard, but I don't know if it's gained a lot of traction, because it's, like I think Kate was referring to, it's maybe a long-term solution. They have to look out more. And look, I think there's a communication aspect to this. I mean, there's an erosion of public trust that has already occurred throughout the entire Zika news cycle here through the summer, I think, because of mixed messages from different levels of government and public health officials. And so if you tell people we're going to introduce these new critters into the environment and they're going to help us keep Zika down, I mean, you're bound to get a lot of people who say, you know, I don't believe you.
Yep. Joey Fletcher, Miami Herald, Kate Stein, WLRN reporter. I wish I could say that this was it for this discussion, but sadly, we're going to be revisiting this and pretty soon. Thank you both. We're going to take a quick break. When we return, more commercial flights to Cuba means more American travelers on the island, but is it even making a dent in Cuba's economy? We'll be right back.